Our lesson today is entitled, How to Respond to Unexpected Kindness. Have any of y'all have ever experienced unexpected kindness? Anybody here? Unexpected kindness came from somewhere and you just didn't realize it and thought, oh my soul. And the question is how did you respond? Now, it just so happens that for 30 years, or 27 and a half years, I was in a ministry of which I was able to offer unexpected kindness from time to time, and I was amazed at how people responded to the unexpected kindness. And when we came here to lesson number 10, chapter 2 Samuel chapters 9 and 10, they're short chapters, and we're going to go through both of them today. I was amazed when I realized David is showing unexpected kindness to two different people, and on top of that, he is getting two totally different responses. In fact, I kind of would ask you the question, how do you respond to unexpected kindness? Now, I'm going to delve a little deeper in that and see how you might place yourself on a scale, and that's what I've got here, I've got a scale. Are you grateful whenever you have unexpected kindness come to you? Or are you skeptical of that unexpected kindness? I just saw smiles go across because that's what you were thinking. Whenever something happens, you go, okay, what's the ulterior motive in this? Are you thankful for unexpected kindness, or are you in some ways hateful for unexpected kindness? Now listen, these are polar opposites, all the way from the kindness, the thankfulness, all the way over to the hatefulness. And you have to remember, in between both sides, people react all different ways in between both sides. Okay. Does it depend on who's being kind to reflect how you are kind? Okay, does it depend on your status in life at the moment of how you respond to kindness? Boy, I could sit here for weeks and just tell you about different situations with different folks of how I have offered kindness or in some form or fashion and how I've been responded to. So, you know, I have to ask the question, are you open to just certain kindness? Just from certain people? Just under certain circumstances? Are you open to all types of kindness? So you have to realize we sometimes, in our status in life and where we are, we respond to kindness in different ways. Now listen, are we, as we come to this passage of Scripture where we are today, we're going to deal with two people. And here's the two names. First of all, it's Mephibosheth. Can you say Mephibosheth? Okay, try to say that three times together. It's kind of tough, isn't it? Mephibosheth, yeah. Now, Mephibosheth is, see, I messed it up. Mephibosheth is in chapter 9, and he is a person who has absolutely nothing. I mean, he truly has nothing. The person on the other end of the spectrum in chapter 10, his name is Hanun, and he has everything. He truly has a kingdom. He's a king. He has everything. So where are you in this? What kind of person are you? Would it matter? Well, let's go through the scripture and we're actually going to see whether it matters. And the thing about it is I'm not picking on anybody here Well, this is one of these things that's these are biblical principles that help us in life if we just realize. And they're in the Bible for some reason. And the reason is they're here is to teach us and to train us. Oh, we can go over to the New Testament all we want and we can learn about righteousness and all this kind of stuff. But if we don't go back to the Old Testament is filled with stories. Stories that actually help us understand the New Testament. So as we pick up in chapter 9, we are starting with the kindness in the kingdom of David towards a guy by the name of Mephibosheth. And chapter 9, verse 1 picks up with these words. Now, then David said, "Is there yet anyone left of the house of Saul that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not yet anyone of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" And Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan who is crippled in both feet." So the king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba said to the king, "Behold, he is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, in Lodebar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, from Lodebar. Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, the son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and prostrated himself. And David said, "Mephibosheth." And he said, "Here is your servant." And David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly." And again he prostrated himself and said, "What is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me?" Remember last week we talked about the dog issue or a cat issue or whatever. And back in Leviticus for all the people, they were not to touch anything with paws. And if they did, it would cause them to be unclean until evening. It was a sin. They never had cats or dogs or anything with paws in their house because it would make the house unclean for them to be in. And then especially it comes around, it says, okay, just to make sure that you understand, even if those animals with paws are dead and it's just the carcass, don't touch the carcass either, because it will cause you to be unclean until evening. That was in last week's lesson. Well, King Saul, I want you to know, had two, I hope I can say this, Mephibosheths in his descendants, in his heirs. King Saul was married to Ahinoam. We find that out in 1 Samuel. And with Ahinoam, King Saul had four sons: Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua, and get this, Ishbosheth. There's another one, isn't it? Ishbosheth. Now, Jonathan, the oldest of Saul, had a son by the name of Mephibosheth. And we find that's the grandson of King Saul. Okay, now I'm going to get over to the other side of King Saul. King Saul had a concubine by the name of Rizba. Well, Rizba, with King Saul, had two sons, Armoni, and get this, Mephibosheth. So Saul had a son by the name of Mephibosheth, and he had a grandson by the name of Mephibosheth. And this Mephibosheth, that's the grandson, is the one we're talking about today. Now, let's pick up, and I'm sorry, all this stuff is not in your notes, so this is all extra. I mean, I'm backing up the truck and dumping it. You've got the stuff in your notes that you can go home and read, and then I'm loading you up with more information because I didn't want to make this into two lessons. First of all, King Saul, Jonathan, Abinadab, Malchishua, died on the same day on Mount Gilboa. 7 to 12 days later, David is crowned king in Judah, the tribal area of Judah. David becomes the king at age 30. Mephibosheth, we are told, we'll read about this in a little bit, is 5 years old when Jonathan and King Saul and Malchishua and Abinadab die on Mount Gilboa. Mephibosheth is 5 years old. Okay. Solomon will be born when David is 40 years old, in David's 10th year as king. That means that when Solomon is born, Mephibosheth is 15 years old. See, we're just doing the math here. Okay, some of this stuff the scripture doesn't actually tell us, but it gives us enough information to do the math. All right, now, Solomon became the king when David resigned at age 70. Solomon was 30 years old. Okay, now let's do the math on that. That meant that Mephibosheth was 45 years old when Solomon became king. So when did David want to show this kindness to Mephibosheth? Well, David had to have shown Mephibosheth this kindness sometime between the birth of Solomon and Solomon taking the reign as the king. Why do we know that? Because the scripture's about to tell us that Mephibosheth had a son when David showed him the kindness. Folks, boys 15 years old didn't have sons back then in the Jewish place. I mean, some of them probably did. You just never know, okay? But it was a sin for, wasn't the place because he had not become a man yet. In the Old Testament, I know we do bar mitzvahs at the age of 13 when they become a man. That's not what the manhood was in the Old Testament. Manhood became at the age of 20 years of age. Now, he could marry earlier, but and some did, but that's when manhood became, you became a man at age 20. All right, so Mephibosheth is living with this guy by the name of Machar, the son of Meliel, in Lodibar, and Lodibar is in the tribal area of Manasseh. Well, wait a minute. King Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin. All of King Saul's property that he owned, that was part of his family, that was gifted to them when Joshua took the promised land, was in Gibeah. Why is Mephibosheth in the land of Manasseh, the tribal area of Manasseh? It's a very interesting question. Anyway, the reason is we already know he is lame in both feet and somebody is taking care of him. Somebody is showing him kindness to take care of him. So David, as we read, has called for Mephibosheth, sent for him. So Mephibosheth, to get there, he has to come across the Jordan River to the west, go down the Arbor, that's the sand area on either side of the Jordan River. Both sides are called the Arbor. But he'd go down the west side because that's where one of the kind of trade routes went, because that was the safe way to go except in the flooding season. And then they would turn and go directly past the Mount of Olives on the left-hand side and then on into Jerusalem, the 2 miles into Jerusalem. So Mephibosheth came and he joined David there in Jerusalem. And David, if you remember, said to him, "Do not fear, for I will surely show kindness to you for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you shall eat at my table regularly." In other words, something is going on with all of Saul's land over in Gibeah, and David is saying, it belongs to you. Your grandfather is dead. Your father is dead. Jonathan's dead. Abinadad, dad, who had been the next to get the land, is dead. Malchishua, who would have been the next to get the land, is dead. Ishbosheth, who would have inherited the land, and he did for 2 years, who was the king of the north for the first 2 years of David's reign in the south. It could have been his, and it actually was his. But if you remember, Ishbosheth didn't use his King Saul's capital as his capital. He went over into Manasseh area. He went into the tribal area of Manasseh, and there he placed his capital over there. Ishbosheth is fearful of what the people are going to do to him because everybody knew that David was supposed to be the next king. And Ishbosheth allowed Abner to say, hey, I'm going to make you the king. And he did. Well, also, if you remember, the scripture tells us that Mephibosheth prostrated himself and said, what is your servant that you should regard a dead dog like me? In other words, he's saying, why are you offering this to me? Why are you offering me everything that was mine but wasn't mine? And he's been living over with Machir, who has been taking care of every need that he has. And David is just being very kind to him, and he's going to restore it. So David and Mephibosheth are in Jerusalem of Mephibosheth. Well, anyway, so David's got some instructions for Ziba, some directions. And here's what we hear David say to Ziba. Then the king called Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, all that belonged to King Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall cultivate the land for him, and you shall bring in the produce so that your master's grandson may have food. Nevertheless, Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servants, so your servant will do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table as one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. That's the place where we get it, where we understand this is happening after Mephibosheth is 15 years old. This is happening somewhere down in David's later years. It goes on to say, and all who lived in the house of Ziba were servants to Mephibosheth. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he ate at the king's table regularly. Now he was lame in both feet. Ziba, his 15 sons and his 20 servants are on Mephibosheth's land over in Gibeah. David and Mephibosheth are in Jerusalem. And so, as the scripture says, Ziba's taking care of the land. He's getting all the produce and he's bringing it in for Mephibosheth. And what you have to understand is because Mephibosheth is the really sole legal heir of this land, Mephibosheth really is responsible for all the women and children, sisters and everything. Because remember, only the men died. He still got aunts. He still got sisters. Maybe his mother is still alive. Maybe King Saul's mother is still alive. We don't know. We also have to remember that everybody who was part of that family of King Saul, distant, that lived on the land that was given to the family, all came down to the responsibility of Mephibosheth. And so David has put Ziba in charge of making sure that food is there for Mephibosheth's taking care of the family. So all of a sudden, Mephibosheth, who has nothing, has about everything that he needs. And Ziba is over there taking care of it. And then we come to that phrase, and Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah. Mephibosheth had to have Micah sometime after he was 15 years old. Okay, so we ask the question, did Mephibosheth have the son Micah while he was still up with Manasseh? He married into somebody from the Manasseh area after he was 15? Well, I believe that's a possibility. Or did he wait until he was with David in Jerusalem and get married into one of those down in Jerusalem to a girl down there and have Micah? I know the answer to that. You know what the answer is? I have no idea. Absolutely no idea. All we know is that Mephibosheth had a son by the name of Micah. And the Bible doesn't share with us any time to tell us any more about when this kindness of David happened. But the compiler, who was Jeremiah, decided to put it in here at this point. And so now, David, if you remember, he said, now he, and that's Mephibosheth, was lame in both feet. How did that happen? How in the world did that happen? Well, when we go back to 2 Samuel chapter 4, we actually have already studied this. Here's what we heard about this. Now Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son crippled in his feet. And here's the story. He was 5 years old when the report of Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel. That's where Mount Gilboa is. And his nurse took him up and fled. And it happened that in her hurry to flee, he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. So that's how we know how old Mephibosheth was when his dad died. So our compiler ends the story of Mephibosheth here at the end of this chapter 9. We're done with chapter 9. And he's going to take us on into another person that David showed his kindness to. Jeremiah, the compiler, turns around and he says, okay, now we're going to talk about the enemies of the kingdom. And we're going to talk about Ammon and Aram are going to be defeated by David. David thinks his battles are over. He's already defeated Hadadezer and Aram, and David thinks his battles are over, but oh, a new thing coming here. And David has a friend by the name of Nahash. 2 Samuel chapter 10, verse 1 picks up with this. Now it happened afterwards that the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanun, his son, became king in his place. And then David said, I will show kindness to Hanun, the son of Nahash, just as his father showed kindness to me. So David sent some of his servants to console him concerning his father. Now you see the word afterwards? Jeremiah is putting that in there on purpose. When did he start to show kindness to Hanun? It was after he was showing kindness to Mephibosheth. First Chronicles passage says this, basically the same thing. It says, sometime after this, King Nahash of the Ammonites died, and his son Hanun became king. David said, I am going to show loyalty. You mean it was kindness a while ago, but it's loyalty to Hanun, because his father, Nahash, was always loyal to me. So David sent messengers to express sympathy to Hanun about his father's death. You see the words, sometime after this, sometime after David started showing kindness to Mephibosheth. Okay, this passage means David had a relationship with the king of Ammon. And you say, well, who is Ammon? Well, the territory of Ammon and Moab, I've got them marked out here. This is very interesting. Now, of the brown that you see there, not the blue, that's water. But of the brown that you see there, that is basically all promised land under David. It's all the promised land under David and his kingdom. It's going to be the promised land under Solomon also. Now, what I'm not showing you is there is moving up all the way to the Euphrates River. There's a lot of land above this area, and there's a lot of land below that are still under control by David. But I wanted to carve out Moab and Ammon, and I want you to know who Moab and Ammon are. They're cousins of the Jews. If you remember, Terah was the father of Abraham, and Abraham's brother, son of Terah, was Haran. You've heard the word Haran in our news. That Haran is named after this Haran, the brother of Abraham, or Abram still at this point in time. Abram is going to have a son by the name of Isaac. You remember that. He also has a son by the maid whose name is Ishmael. But we're looking at Isaac here. Haran died before Abram left that area across the Euphrates that is named after Haran today. And his son Lot joined up with Abram and went down into the promised land after Terah had died. Moab and Ammon, by the way, we call it Ammon now. And you have heard the word Ammon Jordan. That's the land right there. That's the heritage land of Ammon and Moab. Lot, when the night happens, the destruction, Lot and his two daughters and his wife get out of town. The wife turns around, turns to a pillar of salt. They get up down to Zoar, up on a mountain of Zoar. They're looking back, everything destroyed. The girls think the life has come to an end for humanity. They get their dad drunk one night, and one gets pregnant with a baby. That's Moab. And then the other one gets him drunk the next night and is pregnant with Ammon. And then they grow up in their tribes and they take this land. And when Moses is bringing them into the promised land, Moses does not allow these two plots of land to become part of the promised land because they're cousins, Moab and Ammon. Well, what happens? Here's what happens. But when David's servants came to the land of the Ammonites, the princes of the Ammonites, that means that's going to be the brothers of Hanun, the other sons of Nahash, the princes, the other young men, maybe some cousins. They're all related to Nahash, who's dead now. Now, the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun, their Lord, do you think that David is honoring your father because he has sent consolers to you? Has David not sent his servants to you in order to search the city, to spy it out and to overthrow it? So Hanun took David's servants and shaved off half their beards and cut off their garments in the middle as far as their hips and sent them away. So word gets back to David, and David has the men stay in Jericho until their beards grow out. In fact, we know that because the scripture says that. And it says, when they told it to David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly humiliated. And the king said, stay at Jericho until your beards grow and then return. Now, here's the deal you need to know for the beard in Israel. In Israel, no beard meant that you were a male, you were under 20 years of age, and you were not married. You got that? So you're under 20, you're male, and you're not married. That means you don't have a beard. You do not grow a beard yet. But if a male married, even under the age of 20, he immediately starts growing a beard. So for all you women, if you were Jewish, the moment you married that handsome, clean-shaven man, you're going to have to live with a brush for the rest of your life every time you're going to kiss your husband. All right. Because as soon as they get married, they have to start growing the beard. But at the age of 20, guess what? You start growing a beard also. And get this. To the rest of the world, once you become a man at the age of 20, it tells everybody else in the world who knows the Jewish culture that you are a free man, an Israelite who is a free man, and you're not a slave of anyone. Because in all the rest of the world, slaves were always clean shaven. In fact, most of the time, their hair was shaven off also, all over their body to keep. And whenever you saw someone who was clean shaven, who you knew was over 20, that was a person, a slave, that was running away. Now, about the clothes being cut. The Levitical law required that males and females cover their bodies at all times when outside of the home. All times. Modesty. Modesty. The only body parts that could be shown were the head, the neck, the hands, the ankles, and the feet. These men have had their clothing cut off to where they're shows. Well, David is mad. He is really mad because of his kindness being rejected by someone whose dad he was loyal to and was loyal to him, and they had been friends for a long, long time. That's how we know this is at down 30th year of King David's reign, somewhere along with that. And now when the sons of Ammon saw that they had become odious to David, the sons of Ammon sent and hired the Arameans of Beth Rehob and the Arameans of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Maacah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob, 12,000 men. But you'll note that there are absolutely no charioteers mentioned. No chariots, no men riding on the chariots, or anything like that mentioned. So where are these towns? Okay, look down at the bottom of the map. You see Ammon? Okay, I'm showing you north of Ammon now, up through Damascus. This is all around Syria. You see the Euphrates River up there. By the way, the promised land is supposed to go from the Euphrates River to the Nile River, but Joshua didn't finish the job. Joshua stopped taking the land he was supposed to take. But now we're dealing with, David's dealing with towns Beth Rehob, right there west of Damascus. And Zobah, which is almost just a few, 60 miles or so from the Euphrates River. And Tob, which is off towards and almost to the... So from these towns, the whole army starts moving down to the capital city of Ammon, which is the capital city's name is Rabbah. Well, when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the army and mighty men, the sons of Ammon, came out and drew up in battle array at the entrance of the city, while the Arameans of Zobah and Rehob and the men of Tob and Maacah were by themselves in the field. They're hiding around. So here we are. We see this map. Now we want to get in on this map a little closer. So when we get in a little closer, we see that there is the capital city, and that's where they are. Amorites have come out of their city, and Joab has now moved to the west of the city. You see the little Joab that came up there. That's where he's got his army. And the problem is, what Joab doesn't know quite yet, but is about to know, is all these Arameans from up north have moved in right behind him. Joab and the army of Israel is trapped between two armies. They're going to have to fight from the front and have to fight from the rear. And this is not a good deal. First Chronicles tells us the same thing, but listen, he adds some things. When the people of Ammon realized how seriously they had angered David, Hanun, and the Ammonites sent 75,000 pounds of silver. Can you imagine in that day trying to haul 75,000 pounds of silver in wooden wagons with wooden wheels with horses and over rugged roads that don't have concrete or asphalt on it? Can you imagine? Well, they did that to hire chariots and charioteers from Aram Naharim and Aram Maacah. That's just Maacah. Aram Naharim also, by the way, is Rehob. And from Zobah. And they also hired, get this, 32,000 charioteers and secured the support of the king of Maacah and his army. That's with the 1,000. And these forces camped at Medeba, where they were joined by the Ammonite troops that Hanun had recruited from all his own hometown. Now note here, 32,000 charioteers are showing up also with all that was there before. This is a big army. This is going to take God's intervention to help Israel. And God never failed Israel on it. So David has a plan, and the plan is with Joab. It says, now when Joab saw that the battle was set against him in the front and in the rear, he selected from all the choice men of Israel and arrayed them against the Arameans. But the remainder of the people he placed in the hand of Abishai, his brother, and he arrayed them against the son of Ammon. And what I'm saying here is David had the bigger army behind, Aramean army behind him, 32,000 chariots, the men and all that. So he took the choice, the best warriors he had, and Joab kept them. And then all the other warriors who were just so-so warriors, he gave to his brother Abishai, who was going to fight the smaller little. And he said, if the Arameans are too strong for me, then you will help me. But if the sons of Ammon are too strong for you, then I will come to help you. Front in the scripture is the same word as the Hebrew word east. It always means east. Rear in Hebrew is the same word as west. It always means west. So when you talk about you want to go to the front of the tabernacle, you go to the east side of the tabernacle. You wanted to go to the rear side of the tabernacle, you go to the west side of the tabernacle. It's all the way, it's as clear as the bell to Hebrew folks. To us, it means something different, but that's what it means. Okay, so Joab puts his brother Abishai facing the east against the Ammonites. Joab and his men face west against the Aramites. So we've got Abishai, and he is going to fight the Ammons on the east. We've got Joab, and he is going to fight the Arameans on the west. And Joab and Abishai's forces are back to back, one facing one direction, the other facing the other direction. Well, that Joab says to Abishai, and continuing the story, he says this, "Be strong and let us show ourselves courageous for the sake of our people and the cities of our God." Joab, they fight, the Arameans flee, Joab returned from fighting, and he goes back to Jerusalem. Hanun has not given up yet. So he goes north of the Euphrates River to Hadadezer, who David has already defeated before, and he hires Hadadezer to come again, and they come down to a place from Shobal's the commander beyond the river, and they come down to a place in Ammon, and that place in Ammon, he brings 7,000 charioteers and 40,000 foot soldiers, and they come down to fight against David, and they're going to fight against Hadadezer also. And the Arameans saw that they had been defeated by Israel, and they gathered themselves together, and they went home, and they never joined in a fight with Ammon again, is what the scripture said us. But Shobal had died. And they did it. It all happened right there at Helam. They didn't make it down to Rabbah. David defeated them. Well, when all the kings and the servants of Hadadezer saw that they were defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel. Oh, good. They made peace with Israel. And they served them. Yeah, David started collecting a tax for them. And by the way, for the very first time, David is controlling from the Euphrates River all the way down almost to the Nile River. But he didn't take it for the promised land. He's just putting them all under a tax. Had he put them under attacks, what was going on right now in Damascus and Syria and all of that in our world today would have not been happening the way it had been had Joshua done what he was supposed to do. And we do not know why David did not choose to make that part of the promised land, but he did. But an important point here is that David has now defeated Hadadezer twice. So now let's really quickly compare the two responses from David, of David's kindness. Mephibosheth was gracious for the gift from David. He was a man who had nothing. Hanun listened to his counselors, and Hanun started a war based on the kindness of David against David. Started a war just in how he responded. So how do you respond to kindness? As I told you in the beginning, I've had it all the way from one end to the other. And I've had people, when I've showed kindness, who started a war with me. Started a war. So how have you shown kindness to someone in the past? Were you like Mephibosheth and totally surprised and totally in awe that someone would be kind to you? And almost to the point where you think you weren't worthy of the kindness. Or were you like Hunan? Not really knowing the person offering the kindness, you're skeptical and you're defensive and thinking the kindness is for some devious reason. You know, you're always thinking, there's got to be something going on here. How should we respond to kindness? You should accept it graciously, no matter whom it comes from. That's how you should accept kindness. Now, if you think that there is some little devious problem going on, you still accept it kindly and graciously, but you keep your distance and you be very, very careful and let time prove it out. Why do I say this? I say this because David had a long relationship with Hanun's father. And Hanun should have known better. Hanun had no reason to act like he did towards David. Because David had been king long enough that everybody knew David's nature. Mephibosheth may not have had a personal relationship with David. You remember that? Because Mephibosheth was only 5 years old whenever King Saul died and Jonathan died. And for that entire 5 years, David had been on the run from King Saul, not in his presence, not with Jonathan, because they didn't see each other for many, many years. So Mephibosheth probably, the five-year-old Mephibosheth probably never met David. And then he was hiding over in the Manasseh area. Yet by the time David showed kindness to Mephibosheth, David had been the king for long enough that everybody knew who and what he was and how he thought. So at this point in the scripture, the compiler ends the section on David's triumphs. He's told us all about the triumphs. And next week, he is going to tell us and move us back in time, back to David's 8th year as king. And get this, he's going to start telling us about David's troubles. And the title to next week's lesson is this: Can someone's sin really cause a lifetime of trouble for others?